He's there pulling Ellis's hand off the wall and shaking it just like he was a politician running for something, and Ellis's vote was as good as anybody's. "Buddy," he says to Ellis in a solemn voice, "my name is R.P. McMurphy, and I don't like to see a full-grown man sloshing around in his own water. Why don't you go get dried up?" Ellis looks down at the puddle around his feet in pure surprise. "Why, I thank you," he says, and even moves off a few steps toward the latrine before the nails pull his hands back to the wall. McMurphy comes down the line of chronics, shakes hands with Colonel Madison and with Ruckley and with old Pete. He shakes the hands of wheelers and walkers and vegetables, shakes hands that he has to pick up out of laps like picking up dead birds, mechanical birds, wonders of tiny bones and wires that have run down and fallen. Shakes hands with everybody he comes to, except Big George the water freak, who grins and shies back from that unsanitary hand. So McMurphy just salutes him and says to his own right hand as he walks away, "Hand, how do you suppose that old fella knew of all the evil you've been into?" Nobody can make out what he's driving at or why he's making such a fuss with meeting everybody, but it's better than mixing jigsaw puzzles. He keeps saying it's a necessary thing to get around and meet the men he'll be dealing with, part of a gambler's job. But he must know he ain't going to be dealing with no 80-year-old organic who couldn't do any more with a playing card than put it in his mouth and gum it a while. Yet he looks like he's enjoying himself, like he's the sort of guy that gets a laugh out of people. I'm the last one, still strapped in the chair in the corner. McMurphy stops when he gets to me and hooks his thumbs in his pockets again and leans back to laugh like he sees something funnier about me than about anybody else. All of a sudden, I was scared he was laughing because he knew the way I was sitting there with my knees pulled up and my arms wrapped around them, staring straight ahead as though I couldn't hear a thing, was all an act. "Hooey," he said. "Look what we got here." I remember all this part real clear. I remember the way he closed one eye and tipped his head back and looked down across that healing wine-colored scar on his nose, laughing at me. I thought at first that he was laughing because of how funny it looked, an Indian's face and black oily Indian's hair on somebody like me. I thought maybe he was laughing at how weak I looked. But then's when I remember thinking that he was laughing because he wasn't fooled for 1 minute by my deaf and dumb act. It didn't make any difference how cagey the act was. He was on to me and was laughing and winking to let me know it. "What's your story, Big Chief? You look like Sitting Bull on a sit-down strike." He looked over to the accused to see if they might laugh about his joke. When they just sniggered, he looked back at me and winked again. "What's your name, Chief?" Billy Bibbit called across the room. "His name is Bromden, Chief Bromden. Everybody calls him Chief Broom, though, because the aides have him sweeping a large part of the time. There's not much else he can do, I guess. He's deaf." Billy put his chin in hands. "If I was deaf, he sighed, "I would kill myself." McMurphy kept looking at me. "He gets his growth, he'll be pretty good sized, won't he? I wonder how tall he is." "I think somebody measured him once at 6'7". But even if he is big, he's scared of his own shadow. Just a big deaf Indian.